When issues of racial disharmony surfaced at the University of Missouri last year, the veil was lifted on a long period of racial tension on the Columbia campus. Black students protested against a culture of racism last fall. It was ugly and publicized nationally. The system's president and Columbia campus chancellor lost their jobs, but a new position was created to deal with protester complaints and make the entire system more welcoming. An Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion was established, and effective June 1st will be headed by Kevin McDonald, who has held similar positions at two Eastern institutions, Virginia Tech and the Rochester Institute of Technology. Kevin McDonald, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, so nice to have a chance to talk to you. Let me ask you, Mr. McDonald, what kind of a situation do you expect to find at the University of Missouri when you come to join us in June?
I probably expect to find a couple of things. There will probably be some faction of the community there that is skeptical about a new kind of administrative structure or process, that's attempting to commit itself to some level of transformation for the system and for the schools that comprise it. But I also think that there's also going to be a critical mass of people, a collective will, if you will, that are really looking forward to working collaboratively with another interested party to move things forward for the system.
Well, you're charged with fostering a more inclusive university system that embodies a true culture of respect. How does one go about that?
Gosh, it's a great question. I think it involves really trying to build some level of credibility and cachet as well, right? I think there has to be a level of pervasiveness and intentionality with which you're showing up and connecting with individuals, hearing important to kind of historic stories that kind of provide the context, but also coming with some ideas toward the future, some strategic planning efforts, some important initiatives that, coupled with resources, are going to ultimately move some of these things that have been impediments to the community in the past forward and move them out from being barriers.
What are some of those impediments as you've been able to see them so far?
Yeah, thus far, I mean, I think that there are desires, and quite honestly, I think this is something that institutions across the nation are grappling with around increasing the compositional diversity of your faculty and staff and students, of increasing opportunities to retain that diversity amongst those constituencies, thinking about ways to enhance environments. They talk about culture, climate, and collegiality, and kind of getting an idea of what that appears to be within our system and the schools that comprise it, and then ultimately sustaining efforts and being able to assess those efforts and being able to share that information in very transparent ways with the community.
You know, we've just launched a new project here at St. Louis Public Radio called We Live Here, and the first of these programs in a new season is dealing with the question of believability. And as it turns out, there's a lot of evidence that people of color and minorities in general are not believed when they have complaints. Is this something that you have run across in your various positions at various institutions?
Yeah, I mean, I started out in a very reactive role in investigating complaints of discrimination for the Department of Justice and more broadly for higher education institutions at the initial kind of onset of my career. And by and large, you see that. And I think, quite honestly, I mean, we think about the history of our nation. There was this level of disparity that existed, right, and systems and structures that I think continue to impact notions of believability within the communities, and I think that carries on to today. And so, yeah, I definitely found myself exposed to that on a regular basis.
I think one of the things that you may run into in the Missouri system, University of Missouri system, is the issue of trust. The problems that surfaced last fall are not new. They've been around for a long time, but they've been kind of undercover, if you will. I wonder what the challenge is going to be for you to assure students that they can trust you and they can trust the system.
Yeah, I think I have to engage in very meaningful and intentional ways with our community members there so that the students really see not as a person that they may connect with just rhetoric, right? And that it's actually backed with action, and that it's action that includes the students in very meaningful ways in the developmental and implementation processes. And I think that's important, so that they see themselves as equal stakeholders, are treated as such, and are as much as a part of the solution as identifying the problems.
There is lots to talk about, Kevin MacDonald. I have to take a break. Let's do that now and come back and continue our conversation. I'll also invite listeners, if they'd like to be a part of it, to give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. Back with Kevin MacDonald, the University of Missouri Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer as of June 1st. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Kevin MacDonald. Mr. MacDonald, it's interesting. The two headlines there both have relevance to the University of Missouri and what you'll be coming into effective June 1st. One is the search for a new president here. I would have to think that you would be watching that very, very closely to see what kind of a signal that's going to send, the selection is going to send to the students on campus who are concerned about the trust and other issues that we chatted about.
Yes, I am. I mean, the new president will serve as my new boss, right? And so, and I think it's going to be important that as the board of curators, the communities on our respective institutional kind of campuses approach this with high levels of intentionality, that we're looking for key qualities, and one of which I think is going to be important to be able to engage with community members, right, to be active listeners, to ultimately be able to take that information and engage in a way that identifies both the important issues but also engages community members in identifying strategies to meet those needs.
Have you had conversations, I'll have to assume that you have, with the interim president, Michael Middleton?
Yes, I mean, I have really enjoyed my conversations with President Middleton. He is engaged at very high levels, very informed, and committed to really trying to meet the needs and not letting the issues that of the fall kind of define the system and its institutions moving forward. I think he's just committed to engaging the community in very meaningful levels, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to work with him.
Obviously, you'll be dealing with four separate campuses, and I'm just wondering if you think at this juncture, before you've even arrived, if a one-size-fits-all kind of strategy will be necessary, or something you'll have to work on, or individual strategies.
Yeah, I think it's been clear from both my time interviewing and having an opportunity to connect with the chief diversity officers at their respective institutions that it's going to be important to, although develop an overarching kind of strategy or strategic plan moving forward for diversity and inclusion, that the individual institutions kind of find themselves in that plan, right? I think a level of individuality is has been described to me and echoed at each kind of campus's administration, and I think it's going to be important for any strategy to allow each place to see themselves within that structure. They're very different from a standpoint of thinking about what they offer. Some maybe having more graduate programs, some more science and technology focused, right? One research, one. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that, identify those differences, but also really see under the kind of umbrella of moving forward in diversity and inclusion with an overarching plan to identify and allow for individuality.
I assume you'll be visiting the individual campuses and spending some time there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's very important to do. I try to do that early and with great levels of regularity. I think it's important to really get an idea of the lay of the land. I want to be able to connect with both the chief diversity officers, their chancellors, their members of administration, but maybe most importantly, the faculty, staff, and students who comprise those communities.
Well, you mentioned the faculty, and there's another issue, I suppose that falls under your purview, that being that it may be necessary to have some very intense talks with faculty with regard to their approach to the students that we're talking about.
I think it's going to be important to really be able to collaboratively work with each kind of campus unit, right, to identify initiatives that allow for those conversations. And I don't know if those definitely the ideas, the strategies, the initiatives can can kind of collaboratively be derived from a system level. But I think the implementation is going to have to be at each kind of campus unit level with, and I welcome the opportunity to be involved, but allow for, again, that kind of individual approach because they know their campus community better than anyone, and it's going to be really working with those chief diversity officers on the ground there to really implement and engage. And I think it's going to be important conversations to have around issues of diversity and maybe most specifically around race as well on those campuses.
Do you think it might be necessary to even go so far as to establish some sort of anti-bias training project?
I think many campuses, including the one that I'm currently at, our Rochester Institute of Technology, has created a task force to tackle things like bias, unconscious bias, microaggressions, things that can manifest itself in many communities, and looking at the impact, right, and the development of those, but also looking at ways to eradicate them on our campus or at least minimize their detrimental impacts for campus community members. So I think being able to do that, and quite honestly, I would suspect that some of that is already taking place on those campuses already. It sounds like there's something really involved conversations, and probably some of these strategies are already being developed. So to the extent that I can support them at the system level, I look forward to doing that.
We have a caller who would like to get into this conversation, so let's bring him in. That would be Tom, who is calling from Kirkwood. Tom, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with our guest. So go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I had a question about student loans. How does access to scholarships and student loans, especially for the underrepresented students, impact equity at the University of Missouri institution, as well as do you think that there's going to be roadblocks or barriers to your job that are going to mask the institutionalized racism that's kind of going on and has been going on for a long time? And thank you. I'll take it off the air.
Sure. So I think access to resources is something that's important for our college students, and we see it manifesting itself along socioeconomic kind of underrepresented populations lines, right? And so to the extent that there are opportunities to gain access to that and continue to remove those kind of impediments, creates greater access for our students. And, you know, what we're finding is many institutions, particularly after the Michigan decisions that impacted kind of race-conscious admissions policies on campuses, have looked to socioeconomic lines to be able to provide greater access, right, greater opportunities for full tuition scholarships that take the difference between Pell Grants, eligible students, the loans that they receive, and the cost to go to the institution. So we know that that has helped increase the compositional diversity. We know that then from along equity kind of standpoints, along racial and ethnic lines, that that's impacting the ability for many institutions to both increase their compositional diversity and impact in at least many of our kind of urban centers where you see some of the greatest levels, or in many of our rural areas where you see some of the greatest levels of socioeconomic disparities, build that equity in. So that's at least one of way that I would kind of offer to answer that question. So I think the ability to engage in conversations around notions of systemic and structural inequality is going to be important for me moving into this kind of new role. I think institutions are becoming, are understanding identifying a greater need around every turn to engage in these conversations, to not turn a blind eye, if you will, to having conversations about systems and structures in place that could inequitably, in their application, impact constituency groups along racial, ethnic, gender, socioeconomic, kind of first-generation student lines. So I think those conversations are going to be important to identify, are there historical kind of structural pieces in place within our system, within our institutions that comprise it, that have existed, that have served to the detriment of certain constituency groups. But the great thing about this question, and the great thing about kind of the situation that I'm going into, is I've gathered from many in leadership roles, from many in administration, that they are at a point where they find this as a valuable conversation to have. So I'm looking forward to having those conversations I'm not sure if everyone will want to have those conversations, but I'm hoping a critical mass of people will engage at meaningful levels to have those kind of conversations, to identify them and see if, what we can do to kind of remove those barriers and identify strategies that allow us to remove them.
How have you affected change at Virginia Tech and previous position and currently at the Rochester Institute of Technology?
Yeah, so I've approached the diversity and inclusion efforts, kind of looking at it strategically, right, and moving beyond just discussing diversity and inclusion in terms of access to looking at other areas of organizational functioning, right, that include success for our faculty, staff, and students, that include our kind of campus climate and intergroup relations, that include our education and scholarship, our goals to kind of graduate students to operate as effective citizens in a global marketplace, and how does our curricula and how does our educational opportunities to support our faculty and staff prepare us to do that, and then the kind of organizational infrastructure, right, looking at our policies, processes, and practices. So I think that's important, and I think I would bring some of those same strategies to the institution. But I also think it's important to engage in conversations similar to what the previous caller just asked, right, about current structures and systems in place that either are serving to advance diversity and inclusion efforts or are actually serving as impediments. And I think we've been able to do both of those things, kind of create a marriage, if you will, that has allowed us to increase compositional diversity of our faculty here at RIT, to be able to create new initiatives that have impacted both access and success for our students and our faculty, and engage in curricular transformations that are really allowing our students to grapple more with diversity and inclusion in the classroom.
We only have a minute left. You may or may not know that the Missouri legislature is currently considering a proposal to allow students to carry concealed weapons on campus. You have any thoughts about that?
Oh, boy.
Welcome to Missouri.
Yes. I don't actually have any right now, but I look forward to what are probably going to be some very intense and meaningful conversations around it. That's something that many of our institutions are grappling with. RIT just allowed its public safety officers, certain ones, to carry weapons, and that in of itself has led to some intense conversations on campus. So I know notions of safety, notions of those rights are important to community members, and I think it's going to be important for me to be very engaged in those conversations. I lived through Virginia Tech and the shooting there, so I understand it very well.
Right. Well, Kevin McDonald, we're looking forward to having you come on to the University of Missouri and do that job that you've just been selected for, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.